for less than the land was worth. Even though you gave me the freedom, I still bought it in the church's name and bought a place with seven different living areas because I work practically around the clock. I'm like the Pope. I'm not married. I'm married to the church, and my people work with me wherever I go. So I have almost as many staff people who live and work there as here, where I do most of my work, there and here. But when I started painting, I said, that's mine. See, as a preacher's kid, everything I ever touched, somebody made me feel obligated to the church for it. I'd feel guilty about the water that was wasted in the toilet when it was flushed. The art's my gift. So I put on a demonstration, hoping the news media could figure out, well, yeah, looks like he could buy horses with that. And I started painting a suite of paintings of the flowers and the yard around Doc's pad. It's an explosion of color in the spring. Van Gogh painted six. I said, I'm going to paint seven. You know, I always believe in going for it. And then brought them in and sold them, and I made a mistake. Sold them too cheap. That's one mistake. Should have sold 300. If I could roll the clock back, I'd have sold 300 of each. Because we're in the re-emphasizing of the theme right now. By the 300 will I save. I think that's what I'm going to do. The future's not less than 300. But I sold 100 of one, 100 of another, 140 of another, 140 of another. And then I painted another soft stroke one today. Now these are a suite of seven. The first one was a pot in my yard with some flowers. It was the first flowers that really started to explode. The leaves weren't even coming out on the trees in some cases. It's laying on the floor over there, and the light's bad, so you'll never see the color. And one of the cameramen's trying to hold it. Can't you find, Mike, somebody to hold it so I got two cameras that can work? Because the focus of that painting is the pot. Everything else is subordinate. Something kind of interesting is if we get Peter's camera working, the focus is that pot of flowers that sits on the edge of the pool. A little blue jay just flown in there, not for the flowers, but to get a drink of water. Because they water those flowers every day. Kind of an interesting thing to the left is you'll see above the little patio gazebo, you see all those what look like dead limbs on the top. Not even a green twig had come out yet. And that was just a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? Two or three weeks ago. The next painting I did was of the house. I think I sold all of these out in less than an hour, in actual time we spent selling the prints. I sold 30 of those for 300, 100 of those for $300 each, that's $30,000, isn't it? No, that's the wrong one, the house. You know the difference between a tree and a house? Or a pool and a house? I know it's hot today and you're all hung up on a pool. I was sitting out by the pool looking toward the house. It's kind of an interesting house. It used to be a coach house. So it was flat topped. And then when they decided to expand it and put another apartment upstairs, you can see the bricks change as they do the upper layer. Roses were just starting to come out and cascade down. house is a cascade of greenery toward the entrance. The yellow roses were just starting to bloom, red roses coming down. There was a giant urn there with some white flowers cascading down, a couple of statues on each side. Back off to the house. The third I did was to go, now hold it a minute, to go way to the left of the picture. There's seven different living areas in that house, and some of my staff are always living in the fore side of it, down there, which is a separate apartment. I sat at the entrance of that apartment and did the next painting, which is to your left, the swimming pool. But the feature was some birds of paradise that had just exploded right outside the door. Looking off toward the street with the wall of trees that blocks the street off and gives the privacy that's precious at that place. See if you can get the birds of paradise. They were exploding. Now zoom out slowly. The big old dish is there. That was before we had Doc's dish. You'll see a couple, go through the lamppost and you'll see a couple of people sitting by the pool in the distance. Swing around to the right. You'll see the original, go keep going. There's the flower pot. It was the first painting. Keep going. Zoom out a little bit. Remember those black limbs that had no shrubbery on them? That's that cascade of purple. In 1 week's time, it just exploded. And you'll see the limbs on the right back out a bit above the car. Can't drive a big truck in there anymore. Those are the limbs of a giant oak tree that dominates the central portion of the yard. So I said, I can't paint my yard without painting the oak tree. So that was the one we offered yesterday. Yesterday? Yeah, I think so. Let's see the oak tree. See the land on the floor. Not ideal lighting. Move on in front of camera two so you can get straight on pictures. Oak tree, where art thou? You've been looking at that a lot the last day. These are all watercolors, 10 by 14. If you look up in the upper left, silhouetted against the sky is an empty tree that's much like the limbs that were above the gazebo. In a matter of days or weeks at the most, that'll turn into a purple tree. For those of you who just joined us, I'm showing the whole suite that will ultimately be seven of watercolors of the flowers in my yard. Now, this is the oak tree, the one we did yesterday. You joined us too late to see the other three, but you'll see them as the cameras scan them throughout the evening. Now to the right is that same urn that you may have noticed. The flowers are cascading down even more, almost covering up the little angel that sits there. Underneath the oak tree is just a forest of flowers that bloom at various periods throughout the summer. And I was looking over on the left side because I was sitting in the portico entrance of the house. You'll see a little piece of wood where the rose tree is tied to it down at the bottom of the picture. These yellow roses were starting to explode. Right behind them, some very soft pink flowers were just starting to come out. Now, there'll be one more painting that'll be vertical up and down. Today, I just quickly decided I wanted to have one other, not a pot of flowers, but a vase. I was sitting by the pool studying. And Peter, who's over there with a camera, had just cut some roses, stuck them in a vase, and set them down on a little table that sits by the pool. It's kind of an interesting table because it's got little, what look almost like agate rocks in it, sunk in the cement. So I said, heck, I'm going to do another soft stroke painting of that vase with the roses in it. That's the one I did this afternoon. Again, don't give me angles, Peter. Get over a little closer if you can. Because I want you to zoom in on the table and work your way up the vase. Everything else, this is like the pot. Everything else is incidental to the table and the vase. Back off a little. Lower. Let me start below the picture. You guys are too cautious to try to stay inside the frame. Now zoom in tighter. And move right on up the vase. Well, these are watercolors. We have a very rare silver rose in the yard. That's the one on the, hold it right there. That's the one on the right. And we have some roses that mix colors, as you can see, the orange and yellow one, and then a very deep red one. I don't know the names of all the roses, but just about, you know, Pasadena's a city of roses. Just about every rose is in the yard. He'd stuck some birds of paradise he'd just clipped into the floral arrangement. I was sitting there looking at it and said, that's the counterpoint to the pot with the flowers. So that's the one I did today. You can zoom out a little, come back right there, come back on down the vase to the table. Anybody that's ever been in my yard will recognize that table. Zoom out. Everything else is incidental. You'll notice, zoom back in a bit. Very softly is that same little gazebo. You'll just see the frame of it in white and the purple flowers that are covering it now. But zoom on out. That's incidental. The vase and the roses is the centerpiece of this one. Now that's number 5. 100. That's what I said. 100. I would print and sign of this one. When you call, the date and time on the call determines the number you get when you buy the print. And I said I'd only print 100, didn't I? What is that? They're $300 each. I don't care if you take a year or two to pay, as long as you're calling and writing every month to let me know that you want it. Otherwise, you make room for somebody on the wait list. You don't get it till it's paid for. Zoom in on the table again, Peter, and up the vase to the flowers. As I said, everything else is incidental. Just backdrop to the roses and the birds of paradise that are stuck in that pot. 100. Shall we sell them? You think the news media's had the time to turn on their VTRs so they can figure out $30,000. Now let's count it up for a minute. 30,000. How much is the one I sold 140 for? That comes out to how much? 42. So that's 72. Another one, 140, is 134. Right? I sold two at 140, so that's 84,000, right? 42,000 each. And two, 30,000 each is 60. That's $144,000. Is that correct? If this one sells out at $30,000, that'll be $174,000. A couple of weeks. Now that'd buy a horse, wouldn't it? You think they can figure that out? Huh? I want to make a point, by the way. It's nobody's dadgum business if a church wants to buy horses. Maybe you don't know it, but churches can engage in profit incidental to their church activities as long as they pay tax on unrelated business. It's about time somebody educate these dopes that a church can do things other than what they think it should do. Now, I choose, and our church chooses, not to. We don't engage in unrelated business. We create corporations that pay tax first and do any business there. That's why we don't sell any books through the church. And we don't give away any books and records for a gift of not less than a certain amount. There's ways to get out of taxes. Now, as a matter of principle, churches can, but we don't. I teach people to give for biblical reasons, and no one should give to a church except for biblical reasons. And if you want to give to a charity, find one that's already existing and give to the charity. Church doesn't have any business doing that because there are enough established charities to get that job done. We don't want to piggyback on charitable activities. I teach and ask people to give to the church tithes and offerings based on biblical reasons for giving. But the art, that's my creation. And we sell it in a tax-paying entity and buy horses. Now, $174,000 in 2 weeks will buy a horse, won't it? Anybody want these? If you don't want to be on the permanent list, be sure and call and say, I don't want that one, so you can make room for somebody else. Classical music, and let's take about whatever time it takes to sell these out. Turn on your VCR now, news people. All gone. All gone. And about either 12 or 14 over. All gone. What are we going to do?
War.
You know, it's really not fair to a lot of our people. The Sunday crowd, they get mad. I mean, they hear about it after a painted one. All gone. All gone. Makes me sad. Of course, $30,000 eases the pain. You think the news media will ever get it? You enjoy seeing Lucky Rebs last night? He's a new division. I always love quarter horses. How quick can you find Lucky Rebs, Joe? I don't want to start teaching till 10 o'clock. Let's just play till 10 o'clock. 1 minute? Well, now you guys are going downhill. All gone. Sorry, all gone. you know the $174,000 for these five paintings could buy several Lucky Rebs? Now, I love the quarter horse, because that's the first horse I ever had when I was a kid. And it's one of the most exciting events at the horse shows, and sometimes the Western people double up with the American Saddlebred. So I said, I want to find a stock horse that can compete with the best in that spinning and sliding and reining and running. And I think we found a good one. First time out at Santa Barbara, he won the Open Championship. At the same time, there was a charity event going on. That's another thing that makes me mad. Most of these horse shows are for charity. Now, I enjoy painting. You enjoy the art. You buy the art. I enjoy horses. I buy the horses. You enjoy the horses. And the horse shows produce money for charity. Well, there are some exceptions in the news media. I have high regard for Bill Stout. He's not trivializing everything like everybody else does. And his wife's a classy lady who rides the hunters. And that takes courage to ride the hunters. And these shows contribute to charity. It's like preachers, you know. I get so mad at people dumping all preachers, all pastors into the camp with these TV evangelist jerks that until the media stops doing it, I start dumping everybody in the media jerk frame. There are some exceptions, some real good exceptions. I just wish they could dominate. And usually it's the older journalists that learned journalism before TV came along. They still have a respect for reporting the truth and not trying to slant it and doing their research. I respect Michael Jackson. He's out there supporting the attempt in Los Angeles to get polo going, and polo's here in Los Angeles at the Equestrian Center, you can watch polo every Saturday night, and we've offered to help them promote it because the stands need to have more people in it. Those little polo ponies are the greatest expression in courage that I've ever seen, and courage is 90% of faith. They really go for it. You ought to go to the Equestrian Center on Saturday nights and see the polo matches. Great family event. But there are exceptions. Just as there are exceptions in the preacher camp. Thank God. There are thousands of faithful shepherds across this country, pastors. The TV evangelists do not represent the norm. They're mutations. I understand Jerry Falwell delivered his tax returns to the press in order that he, I told you he would program the releases so he could keep his face in front of TV. Well, those people look weird to me. They don't look like ordinary people. What if they go to bed with three-piece suits? I bet they have three-piece pajamas. You can see them wearing a tie to bed. But anyway, one of the most enjoyable shows is the stock horse. So I went out and looked for a little stock horse. I could buy several stock horses, like Lucky Rebs. Of course, I usually get better deals than the norm. So I don't think I could buy several like him, but if there were several like him available for what I bought him for, I could buy several with what I just sold these prints for. Now, at the charity event in Santa Barbara after the regular horse show, they had a special charity event with a 60-piece, well, it was the Santa Barbara Symphony Orchestra, 60-piece under a spotlight. And each horse that performed, the owner had made a contribution to charity, which in our case was Dr. Gene Scott Incorporated. And we introduced Lucky Rebs. Here he goes. And none of these horses had performed under a spotlight or had they seen a symphony orchestra.
The 1983 Reno Snapplebit Futurity was high-scoring herd workhorse and finished fourth overall in the Futurity out of 300 entries. He was shown in cutting by a non-pro and has played well in the $3,000 and also the $1,500 division. He was started more extensively in reigning in 1985 and was shown a limited number of times to winning or placing at each division. In 1986, he won the reigning at the Grand National in San Francisco and was high-scoring working cowhorse at the prestigious event. Lucky Rebs will be shown by Michael Baker for Dr. Gene Scott Incorporated at some of the more prestigious events in 1987 in the reigning division. So look for him at the winner's circle, as we did this morning when they won the Oldman Stock Horse class. Run, stop him, slide him, and turn him. Ladies and gentlemen, Lucky Rebs and Michael Baker.
Work time. Fun's over now. You think press will get it? Some of them will. Some of them. A few smart ones. Who's got my circumciser? Where's my circumciser? For my cigar. It's gone. Gone. Some anti-Semite's been in here. Find that anti-Semite. I took my circumciser. Find that circumciser, Peter. Well, this night's over. This'll do, but it's not the best. Wait a minute. See what I got in my pocket. Convenient, have circumciser, will travel kind. Yeah. Where's my Bible? Where's my Bible? Go check the car. Now we got an anti-Christian in the midst. I was getting ready to say, with a cigar and a circumciser and a Bible, you can go anywhere. Where's my Bible? There it is. Now see if you can find the circumciser before the night's over. Second Corinthians 8. If ye were of the world would love his own. It's too hot in here. If you were of the world would love his own. You ever heard that before? If you want to get it in your head? Now the word is cosmos in the Greek. It means the way the world views things. If you viewed the world, viewed things the way the world views them, the world would love its own. You'd be one of them. Now, Scripture clearly says you're in the world, but not of the world. If you were of the world would love its own. But ye are not of the world, because I've chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Now, periodically, that hatred comes to the surface. And we're witnessing it now because some dumb jerk television evangelist did something 7 years ago that's been discovered. Only God knows what's been done since by those that discovered him. Oh, I was saying, Jerry Falwell. Jerry the Fat. He gave his tax returns to the news. His income last year was, what was it, $459,000. And of course he did it saying that there was no way that Jim Baker was worth more than Falwell was worth. So that should be no more than what Jim Baker got as a salary. Now that ain't quite the way. I don't think either one of them are worth very much. But by the criteria of the business world, executives are supposed to produce at least 10 times their salary. Now, Lee Iacocca got over $20 million. Because of what he did for Chrysler. Jim Baker produced $129 million. Falwell produced somewhere around 70, a little less. Now, both of them, by the criteria of the world, are underpaid. Now, I'm not defending their salaries. I'm not on the side of either one. I just wish they'd quit talking about it. Who cares? All they're doing is trying to somehow justify what they do in the eyes of the world. Well, why don't they become of the world? If you were of the world would love his own. On one of the news tonight, I understand they played the song, Would Jesus Wear a Rolex Watch? How the hell would I know? Somebody wanted me to comment on it. Hell. He set time in motion. What do you want with a Rolex watch? I mean, Jesus knew what time it was without a watch. That's a stupid question. Would Jesus use flush toilets? No, because they didn't have them. Well, would Jesus have a jet? I wouldn't either if I could fly. He flew. This same Jesus which ye see going up to heaven shall come again in like manner. He doesn't need a jet. Frankly, I think it'd be more impressive to come to town from the sky on a white horse. I bet you could sell a white horse that flies for a lot more than a Learjet. Interesting how they hunt and peck in the record of Jesus. I wouldn't carry a shotgun if a sword out of my mouth could kill him until blood runs to the bridle of a horse. Some of these people's comments about Jesus. He's like a two-year-old giving a commentary on Einstein. The whole flap simply reveals that those jerky TV evangelists have not accepted what Jesus said. If you were of the world would love its own, but you're not of the world because I've chosen you out of the world. Therefore the world hateth you. And because of these jerks trying to defend it, all Christianity is starting to think they have to defend their Christian relationship. Number one, if there were no God, the Constitution guarantees in the same amendment that the press has its freedom, the right to worship God without interference. Always worrying about Social Security people giving. I get so damn tired of people worrying about other people on Social Security. It's demeaning to Social Security people. I guess the assumption is that when you get on Social Security, you lose your brains. And you need these fascist elites to tell you what you shouldn't spend your money for. I intend to spend my Social Security the most foolish way I can because it was forced upon me and it's the world's worst investment. You earn your Social Security, friends. I had a nightmare the other night that I'd turned 62 and went for the first time to get my Social Security with some dumb civil servant that had a moron IQ that got there because she was too fat and ugly to get a job anywhere else. Treating me like that I was some slimy worm coming in to beg for my check. Any of you ever gone through that? Social Security people have a right to invest in eternity. If you were of the world would love its own. They hate you. And I've gone on the offensive saying, hey, wait a minute, I don't really care if these TV evangelists kill one another off, but I do care if their idiocy results in a killing or chilling effect on Christians claiming from God his promises and his word for giving. You should not give to a church except for theological reasons. The world doesn't believe in eternity, doesn't believe in God, doesn't believe in eternal rewards, doesn't believe in treasures being laid up in heaven, doesn't believe in divine retribution, doesn't believe in the promises of God, that if you bring the tithe into the storehouse, he will bless you, doesn't believe in the simple act of faith resulting in salvation and the placement in you of the Spirit of life. The natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit. Now you're a new breed, Christ breed. Act like it. They wouldn't believe this either. Moreover, brethren, we do you to wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. 2 Corinthians 8. Now what does that mean? The grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. Well, let me tell you what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean forgiveness. It doesn't mean covering. It doesn't mean the doctrine of grace. It means none of those things, because none of those things were needed by Christ. And yet in this chapter, verse 9, Paul says, "For ye know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ," the grace that was in him. He had grace in him. Now, the law of gravity can be described as a theory, but it can be felt as a force. That's why your feet stay on the ground. That's why you're all sitting in the chair you're sitting in, not floating around in here like those people do. That's why you can drink orange juice without it flying all around. If it weren't for gravity, you better not go to the bathroom. But you don't even have to know the theory for it to work. No matter what you do with children in potty training, you don't have to tell them, don't aim for the ceiling. Thank God there's some parts of that training that are not required. How would you like to start potty training with your baby in one of these NASA space vehicles? You don't have to understand gravity for it to work. Now, in this chapter, grace is being spoken of as a substance. It is the power of grace. It is synonymous with the spirit of grace. It's synonymous with the substance of grace. You could just as easily read this chapter, first verse, "Moreover, brethren, we do you to wit of the life of God." Or you could read it, "We do you to wit of the implant of God's nature." Or you could read it, "We do you to wit of the power of God." Or if you want the Greek word for the substance of God, hypostasis. Grace is being used as a synonym for the substance of God that is put in us, and that's the meaning of being born again. For our faith, God not only covers us with that which is the atonement, he not only lets Christ bear our sins, he not only forgives us, he not only looks at us as redeemed, all of those are in the doctrine of grace, but he literally places in us the substance of his nature. And that's grace also, because it's an unmerited deposit. You don't have to clean up the house for the king to come in. He moves in. That's why the resurrection, which is my subject next Sunday in King's House 1, and the buses will leave from the same place, and I want you there at 11 o'clock. That's why the resurrection is so vital to the Christian faith. Once you can believe that God's substance that raised up Christ from the dead penetrated the rock, penetrated the door, and sailed off in the blue, no difficulty in the next step believing that same substance. It has no problem with molecular displacement. It can move them aside, go in between them. A literal substance of God penetrates our being and comes to dwell in us. And the purpose of the atonement was to remove the barrier of sin, as Galatians 2 says, that we might become the habitation of God through the Spirit. That Spirit of God in this chapter is called grace, because it's an unmerited deposit of God's life. Now, Paul wants to testify to these Corinthians what that deposit, unmerited though it may be, in the lives of the Macedonians looks like. That's the subject of this chapter. How that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. Made givers out of them. The spirit that got in them, deposited in them in spite of their lack of merit, because of their faith, came out a certain way. Spirituality literally means the expressions of the Spirit. It's God being himself through us. Now, if you love the world would love its own. They are corrupt, Paul says, according to deceiving lusts. They not only have desires that are self-serving, geared and run by the pleasure principle, that avoids pressure and seeks satisfaction. They are corrupt according to deceiving desires. As Niebuhr said, we can't persist in just yielding to sin. We must convince ourselves that our sinning is not really sin after all. So those drives of the human nature must be not only given a free outlet, they must be justified. And the world justifies them because that's what we all do. The norm. Now, a Christian has a new life in him. He's a new creation in Christ Jesus. He acts differently. He doesn't have to work at it. It isn't something beat into the outside of you by these jerk TV evangelists. It is an outworking of his Spirit. Because the spiritual person in the literal Greek is the Spirit's person. We've become his habitation. And that Spirit in us will work out through us. That's spirituality. And when it works its way outward, this is what it looks like. In a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded.